Hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes. He happens to have his PhD in political science, but he is currently working as an information securities analyst for the finance and travel industries and will be running in 2020 for state legislature right here in Arizona. This is an Arizona-based podcast. Of course, it's a podcast. You're listening to it. You know it's a podcast based in Arizona about politics and drinking. Okay, if you have any questions, you want to interact, you can do that at Plastic Cup Pod on all your favorite social media sites. And Plastic Cup Pod at Gmail, just in case. Might as well throw that out there because I actually checked it for once. And might as well jump right into it, the drinking part that is. Hey, Sean, what are you drinking?
This week, I'm making a political statement. So I'm drinking vodka mixed with tropical juices and combined over good ice, not that shitty flat crap, but like the good cube ice that you get from Crystal. Ice is very important. People underestimate how important ice is for a good beverage.
I'm drinking vodka.
But because fuck Russia and fuck everything about Russia, my vodka comes from Texas and it's made by a Mexican.
I'm assuming it's Tito's.
Tito's. Good old Bertito.
I am drinking an enormous mimosa because I had a little bit of orange juice and I had champagne. So it was the coldest thing that I had because you know what I don't have? Ice.
Ah, you don't have the good ice. Or any ice, really.
Yeah. Well, I do have some ice, but it's that ice that's been in the freezer that I'm pretty sure is going to like... How does ice get stale? Oh, yeah. It picks up all those freezer smells.
Yeah, it absorbs the shit out of everything in your freezer.
We are going to talk about, on this very podcast, the Trump shutdown. We're going to talk about Syria and Afghanistan. We're going to revisit different ways of voting, different structures for voting. We will find that at the end. We just go ahead and say, my prediction was right. We are still in a shutdown. Do you
goddamn right.
Yeah. Do you see an end in sight?
About a... like 2 or 3 days after the Democrats take over the House.
And what will that entail?
Actually, Nancy Pelosi has already stated explicitly what she's going to do. Day one, they will pass a funding resolution. So basically, the shutdown only impacted 9 executive agencies because those were the 9 executive agencies that the Congress couldn't agree on funding levels for. And so they were existing on what's called continuing resolutions. Well, their continuing resolutions had run out. And they needed either a new one or an actual budget that funded them. So what the incoming Democrats are going to do is they're going to pass 2 separate funding bills. One that funds all of the 8 other agencies through the normal process. And then remaining one, a separate bill that will fund the Department of Homeland Security through, I think, an additional continuing resolution, but with no border funding at all. Either that or they may like throw out there the $1.3 billion in additional border funding, but specifically none of it for physical barriers. But either way, whatever they send him, he's going to have to sign.
Yeah, whatever they send him, he's still going to have to sign. If he's still saying he's not going to sign anything that doesn't have $5 billion for the wall, how is he going to be able to sign that? Hasn't he painted himself into a corner so much that... he can't sign anything without losing face if it doesn't have that $5
billion? Yeah. He's going to have to lose face. Look, he'll still spin it. Remember what the man said. The guy said he could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue in broad daylight and get away with it, right? And thus far, metaphorically, that has proven true. With the 30% of Americans who voted for him, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. And they will find some way to justify it. So in the end, he's going to end up signing what the Democrats send him. And he and his supporters will find some way to rationalize it. It's what they've done all along.
That they had to do it for the American people.
Yeah.
To get, you know, we need to get past this point and we need to get people back to work.
The best part of it is the fucking theater of it, right? The goddamn theater of it. The man who has taken more vacation days than any president in the history of the presidency, who has spent more time fucking golfing than he has doing the business of the people of the United States, is trying to hector the Democrats for going home over the Christmas holiday because he stayed in Washington and worked the way they should have.
You mean sat in the White House alone and tweeted away in his little sadness?
That's the funny part is, I just got done reading a story, a news article that essentially that is exactly what happened. Almost everyone else in the White House staff went home for the holidays. He sat there by himself with fucking Mick Mulvaney, his interim chief of staff, because John Kelly has already left the building, despite the fact that his mandate doesn't end until the 1st of January. So it was basically him and Mick Mulvaney alone in that goddamn building for most of the Christmas holiday. I guess his Jared Kushner came back from Florida a little bit early to help him with this horse shit. But yeah, he sat around probably a lot of the time on the toilet because, you know, his diet sucks, and tweeted.
Of course it was Jared Kushner. He's the one person that had nothing else going on.
I guess he got tired of eating Chinese food at Mar-a-Lago, huh?
And not exactly good news is when these federal employees come back to work, they will not be getting a raise because, as we've discussed many episodes back, it's kind of funny how you hear these things being floated and we react to them like, oh, this is terrible. How can you say that the economy is great and you say that you're going to freeze pay for federal employees? And then you kind of forget about it because this is the way that our lives work now, that everything gets one day in the news and it moves on. But even though we're not paying attention, evidently these stories actually come to fruition. And Trump has said that federal employees will not be getting the 2.9% pay increase to keep up with inflation, even though the economy is doing great.
Yeah.
Do those things go together?
No. I mean, it's spite. It's pure spite. He's doing it. It's red meat to his base. His base, by the way, which a significant number of them subsist in some way or another off of government welfare programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, disability. He has a lot of fucking supporters, believe it or not, that are actually like SNAP recipients, shit like that. And those people hate federal employees.
Farm subsidies.
Yeah. Let that sink in. Those people whose very existence is made possible by the hard work of federal employees have been convinced by the Grover Norquist wing of the GOP to hate federal employees. So freezing the pay of federal employees tickles their cold little cockles here in December. They love it. They eat it up. Oh, it's great. Yum, yum, yum. Fuck you, federal employee. But goddamn it, you better have my Social Security check ready on the first of the month.
Yeah, and if I go to inspect it, you better have the goddamn toilets clean.
Yep.
These aren't all high-level employees.
Nope.
These are everybody that works in these departments.
Yep.
And yeah, that includes the janitor. That includes everybody all the way down.
Yep.
The economy is doing great, and they say that this pay freeze will not hinder their recruitment of good talent for these federal jobs.
Yeah, as evidenced by the massive brain drain from the federal government over the course of the last 18 months. His own goddamn administration can't keep the best and the brightest in the frontline jobs, and he's really going to claim that he's going to get the best and the brightest to sign on to work in the bureaucracy under this administration. What a fucking joke. And again, it comes back to the Fifth Avenue thing. His supporters will fucking believe it. They'll buy it. And there will be no back pay afterwards, by the way. Anyone who's consoling themselves by thinking that these federal workers are just going to get a fat check on their next paycheck, this money is gone. There's no back pay.
What exactly is furlough?
It's essentially like mothballing equipment. We don't need you right now, but we also don't want to like sell you off or throw you away. So we're going to stick you on the shelf. You're not going to get paid, but you're not going to go work anywhere else either.
This is a very important thing. Yeah, I thought that when they said that these people were furloughed, I figured that meant that they were going to get paid.
Oh, no.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, No. 800,000 federal employees, they're not getting paid.
Yeah, I don't think that has been exactly explained.
I've heard it mentioned a few times on the news, but they never mentioned the fact that the money's not going to be paid back. The money would have to be specifically allocated in the next budget to pay them back, and there's no way that passes.
So the people that are in mandatory positions where they said that, you know, that there are like, they're going to keep checking your meat to make sure that you're not poisoned. They're going to continue
to guard the president.
But they're not going to get paid at all for their work?
Mm-mm.
So I guess you should feel lucky if you're not an essential employee, because then you don't have to go to work to not get paid?
Anyone who's wondering, by the way, why dumbass is going through the theatrics of staying in D.C. through the Christmas holiday, it has nothing to do with his work ethic. It has to do with the fact that if he went to Mar-a-Lago, the next morning after his arrival, the front page of the New York Times and CNN's website would have high-resolution photos of the president playing golf while his Secret Service agents guarded him for free. That's bad optics.
Yeah, this is news to me. Man, I'm happy I listened to this Plastic Cup Politics podcast. I learned all kinds of stuff, even though I'm right here in the thick of it. Like, I understand that you're saying that it's red meat for his base, but how do you sell that the economy is doing great when you're raising pay? These aren't like raises. These are inflation. These are keep up with inflation.
Cost of inflation. Yeah. So basically these would be like your merit review for people who are in the private sector, right? Each year, especially at a larger company, you'll get a review. That review will say, okay, you did a pretty good job. So here's blah, blah, blah percent increase to your gross pay for next year. That's essentially what has been frozen for these employees. And that's regardless of the job they did for the last 12 months. Whether it was the employee who did fuck all or the employee who killed themselves to make sure that you had the very best national park experience you could have over the summer, they are both getting fucked in this government shutdown. The failure to increase their pay. Sorry.
If you're living in San Francisco, you're going to need more money. And evidently they are slashing that funding, putting a freeze on that as well. So exactly how you're going to get the best and the brightest, as you know, living in D.C., that's not a real great, it's not a real easy place to find economical rent.
No, it's expensive. It's ridiculously expensive. Yeah, most of the people who work in D.C. live outside of it. They live in Maryland and Virginia. Because very few people can actually afford to live in the District of Columbia, at least in neighborhoods that you are unlikely to get shot in. The shutdown itself is a scandal and an outrage, right? But the fact that either people aren't talking about it or they are talking about it and they sort of shrug and yawn, the fact that 800,000 Americans are being asked from people who make $15 an hour to, you know, GS-17 level employees who are making six figures. And they make six figures, by the way, because that's what you have to pay if you want to get, you know, like top level cryptographers and shit. All of them, right, are being asked to work for free over a vanity project.
Over a wall, which, by the way, our favorite Paul Gosser is now talking about the fence and about how good the fence is going to be. So they're definitely moving the goalposts a little bit on that.
Well, they don't really have a choice now because John Kelly gave an interview to the LA Times yesterday. and he basically said, I don't know. And I'm paraphrasing, but the color here is fairly similar to what he actually said. He was essentially something along the lines of, I don't know. The president keeps talking about a wall and some of his supporters keep talking about a wall, but we haven't actually been talking about a concrete wall since the first 2 weeks of the administration. It's been a metal fence the entire fucking time.
But no, I saw like the mock-ups and they're big concrete walls when like one of them has like a big round thing at the top.
Yeah. Well, so what Kelly was saying is that was basically a dog and pony show. Like the president keeps harping on about this bullshit, but none of the, like, he's basically saying they went to the Department of Homeland Security the first week he was in office and said, okay, what do you need to secure the border? And everyone in the Department of Homeland Security said, we don't need a wall. We need fencing at these strategic points along the border. and we need funding for additional manpower and tech. That's it. And so they went, all right, that's what we're going to look at in terms of our model for securing the border. But in front of the press, the president continues to talk about a wall, despite the fact that no one in his administration has been planning for a wall since week two of his administration.
He's kind of like a goddamn Rottweiler with a ball. Like, that's all he cares about is that ball. And that's all he can focus on is that ball. And like, when you put the ball away, he's trying to still trying to find the ball.
Here, the wall is not the ball in this analogy. Trump's ego is the ball.
Oh, correct.
Right. And that, you know, the wall is merely a symptom of the eternal quest to, like, you know, massage that gaping hole in Trump's ego. I don't know where that hole came from. Probably something in his childhood.
I blame Fred. Well, I mean, if you look at all of his buildings, he has to have his name as big as possible on them. And what would be bigger than a wall at the southern border that everybody knows is the Trump wall?
Well, plus, he talked about that fucking wall for 3 years. And the second he indicated last week or, last week, just prior to the holiday, right, that he was willing to compromise and sign a continuing resolution to keep the government running and then negotiate about the wall in February. Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh cut his nuts off in public, and all of a sudden we're back to talking about the wall and shutting the government down.
He has the worst advisors because they all are on Fox News.
Yeah, well, they're all on Fox News, and here's the fucking hilarious part, right? He still believes that to most people, this will make him look resolute, right? It'll make him look strong. And to some of the dumbasses who still support him, it might. But to everyone else, we're looking at him and going, wait a minute, you made a choice as president, and you made the wise choice to keep the government running through the holidays. And then two talking heads, neither of whom actually live the tenets that they preach, right? Ann Coulter is a whore. She'll say whatever she has to make money. She doesn't believe any of the shit she says. Fucking Rush Limbaugh is still hooked on opiates, right? Mr. Get Tough on Crime, lock them all up and throw away the key. I'm a big fan of Robert Duterte and his fucking, or Duterte and his fucking executing drug users, is himself a fucking oxy addict. These two talking heads, neither of whom live the lifestyles, the tenets they actually preach, the morals they actually preach, castigate him on air, on television and on the radio, and he immediately flips, immediately backs down. To the rest of us, I mean, that's some weak-ass shit right there.
It's just bad advice. Like, I don't understand how we can see that he's not going to get $5 billion. These advisors that are telling him that he has to do this, like, no, you clearly you don't. And it's not going to end well. I mean, well, I will eat all the crow if it does end well for him.
No, there's no way. Look, what's hilarious, right, is that same story that I was reading about the fact that he stayed in the White House with him and Mick Mulvaney over the break. He's complaining about the negative news coverage and the fact that they keep rerunning the clip of him telling Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi that he absolutely would own the shutdown and would never blame Democrats for a shutdown over the wall. And CNN, even Fox, keeps rerunning that fucking clip. And he's mad about it. And it's like, but you said it, you stupid piece of shit. You were on camera. You knew that the fucking red lights were on. You knew they were recording everything you said, you dumb fuck.
Well, a lot of the things that he said tend to be walked back. Much like, so we're going to be pulling out of Syria in 30 days or 10 days now or however many days are left.
On the one hand, it's satisfying to be able to critique his ineptitude in this matter. And like, his supporters have no response, no reasonable response they can make at this point. There's no rational way to justify this behavior, because let's make sure that everyone understands what's at stake here. It's not just a matter of, okay, I'm mad, I'm going to take my ball and I'm going to go home because you won't fund my war in Yemen. Trump may see it that way, and his hardcore supporters may see it that way. But here's what he's really doing. He is upending the lives of 12 to 15,000 American service members and their families, right? And that's just the people that are being pulled out of the Central Asian and North African theater of operations. That doesn't even begin to touch on all of the logistics people who are going to have to actually make this happen, who are now also getting shafted in the military because he made this sudden reversal of direction. Extend that out even further, and this is part of why Jim Mattis left, right? Part of why he told him to fucking kick rocks is because this basically says to our NATO and Middle Eastern and Central Asian and African allies, fuck you. We started this shit. In Afghanistan, we were justified in starting it. We'd absolutely had to start a war there. But we started this shit. Now it's on you. You fix it. We're out of here. Bye. And let's keep in mind that the situation in Afghanistan that we had to go to war to fix was a situation we created in the first fucking place by funding the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets and then abandoning them after our proxy war against the Soviets was over. That's where the Taliban came from, and the Taliban are the people who fucking harbored Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda itself was a product of our funding the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. Some of the first funding that Osama bin Laden used to get his Mujahideen camp started was funding the CIA fucking gave him. So this is a mess we made, and we're going to tell our allies, the people we have to depend on if the world goes to shit, hey, fuck you. You clean up this mess. We're out of here.
Well, I have a feeling that, you know, when you get in a new relationship and you kind of stop talking to your friends and then kind of that relationship goes bad and you have to kind of like come back with your hat in your hand and be like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of sorry about that. I really shouldn't have, surely should have hung out more. But I was dating Donald Trump. So, but it's over now, man. I totally see what you guys were saying.
Yeah.
But I think we should like hang out again, man. You guys like want to go get a beer? Come on.
Bye.
Come on, Merkel. Let's go get a beer.
Yeah. Well, she's on her way out.
Oh, well.
I think she's actually term limited out. That's why all the shit that happened in Paris over the last couple of months was so important, right? Because everyone assumed that after Merkel was term limited out, no one knows who Merkel's replacement is. No one gives a fuck either. That Emmanuel Macron in France was going to take her place as sort of the titular head of the EU, right? And then Paris proceeded to fucking burn and eat itself and vomit and collapse inward all at the same time. And now no one knows who's going to be in charge in Europe. And at the same time, no one knows who the fuck is in charge in the United States. And both of those situations are circumstances that were in part created intentionally by Vladimir Putin.
Does seem like a lot of strings tend to end up at the fingertips of Vladimir Putin. So how do you think that Vlad feels about us pulling out of Syria and Afghanistan?
Well, he's fucking delighted. He loves it. Now he's going to sit down with the representatives from the mullahs in Tehran, and they're going to work out how to sort of divvy up the country amongst various supporters of the Iranians, the Russians, and the Assad regime. There are going to be a lot of shallow graves dug. A lot of women and children are going to be butchered in the next few months. We probably won't see a whole lot of those images here in the United States because they're in Syria. What the fuck do we care? But if you bother, you could take a look at things like the New York Times and a few other reputable outlets, and you'll see what I'm talking about. For the next few months, we're going to see pretty much everyone who opposed the Assad regime liquidated, or they'll flee to camps over the border in neighboring countries. Meanwhile, the Turks and most likely the Shiite majority in Iraq are going to massacre the Kurds, both in northern Iraq, where it's going to be a lot harder for them to do it because the Kurds there are a lot better equipped, and in Syria, where the Turks are already massing armor at the border to roll across and butcher the people who spent the last several years fighting and dying on our behalf against ISIS.
So stay tuned for that on the next Plastic Cup Politics podcast.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I didn't really intend for it to be that big of a bummer, but
yeah, Lindsey Graham had to come out and say that despite what the president said, it won't be 30 days to pull the troops out of Syria.
Well, that's, you know, and it's a symptom of what a simpleton the man is. And let's face it, what simpletons his followers are. They look at it and they go, hey, it's only 2,000 soldiers, right? And their equipment. We should be able to pull that out of there in a few days. That's not the way life works in the real world. You just don't pack them all up into planes and fly them home.
Yeah, they aren't running away from home with a bindle on a stick.
And it's not it like, oh my God. I get so frustrated even fucking talking about it just because it's such, there are some of the stuff that you and I talk about on this podcast is actually really complicated. Like I'm kind of a dick, so I'll make fun of people for not understanding stuff that really by rights they don't necessarily have to understand. I understand it because I specialized in it. I have a degree in it and I'm kind of obsessive about it, but a lot of it is shit that normal people probably don't ever need to know about. And I'm an asshole for making fun of them for it. But this is simple fucking logistics. I would ask any one of these fucking security mommies and football daddies to stop and think for half a second about the logistics required to get your three kids to the soccer field on Saturday morning. Now multiply that out to 2,000 grown men and all of the other grown men and women required to support their operations and all of their equipment and all of the equipment required to maintain their equipment and all of the equipment required to transport their equipment. And they have to unravel all of the relationships that they were building in Syria. They can't just, like, throw up their hands and walk away. There has to be handoffs in various regions to our allies. You know, this isn't 2,000 sacks of potatoes. It's not 2,000 Christmas trees. Like, and Afghanistan's even worse, man. There you're talking about 9,000 troops, some of whom have, like the troops themselves haven't been there for years. Though some of them have spent years in Afghanistan over multiple tours, but like the facilities they work in, some of the contractors over there in Afghanistan who actually support our troops there, like some of those fucking things have literally been there on the ground for years and have to be unraveled and brought home now that dipshit McFuckstick has decided, okay, fine, you're not going to let me fund my buddy Prince Salman's war in Yemen. Proxy war against the Iranians in Yemen. Fine. Fuck you. I'm going to bring all our troops home out of Syria and half of the ones from Afghanistan too. So fuck you.
Sounds just like him.
This is the leader of the fucking free world. This is the person with his finger on the button of the second largest nuclear arsenal on the planet. If you're not fucking scared, you're not paying attention.
Let's bring this down to a little less scary. And talking about something that we covered before in our little diatribes about voting third party. Evidently in Maine, they have a new voting style or something like that I will let you explain. But evidently the governor, Paul LePage, didn't think it was very funny because a Democrat won. And on the certificate saying it, he wrote stolen election on the certificate. So anyway, Page is a douche nozzle.
Let me start off with one thing, because I really want to end on a high note. I love the idea of ending on a positive note, and this is definitely a positive note for American democracy. Let me step backwards for just half a second and say, Paul LePage, you raging sack full of like scabies infested rotten meat, fuck you and everything about you. All right. That shit he wrote on that piece of paper, it may seem funny to some people out there, but it's not funny to those of us who understand what the fuck he was doing, right? What he was doing was denigrating not this specific election, but the entire democratic process by which the election was decided and the courts that supported that election. He was basically saying that all of them were corrupt, not because he had any evidence of corruption, but because they gave a result that he didn't like.
Yeah, because he didn't get his way. Sounds like the president.
Yeah, sounds a lot like the president. You know what it also sounds like? It also sounds like what happens in banana republics.
Yeah, if you don't get the election results that you want, then clearly the election was fraudulent.
Exactly. The election was fraudulent, and your enemies must be punished and persecuted. Does that also sound like the president?
A little bit.
Yeah. So it also sounds like Paul LePage, for anyone who hasn't been paying attention, because, you know, let's face it, Maine's a tiny state.
Maine is basically a tiny Canada.
Yeah, it's blueberries and lobster, right?
Well, no, but I mean, just in that there's within a little strip attached to the rest of the United States, there are people. Everything yeah. north of that, there ain't nothing, just like Canada.
So here's the funny part, right? You think about Maine, you know, it's all up in the northeastern United States. Everyone's like, oh, Maine, Vermont, blah, blah, blah. You know, these are these bastions of like liberalism and progressive politics and blah, blah, blah. But you talk to any Mainers or Vermonters, right? And what they'll tell you is there's a very perverse streak to the politics of both of those places. One, they like electing split tickets, right? And two, they like iconoclasts, man. They like people who are fucking, are sort of off the beaten path and very animated in what they believe. You know, you get fucking Bernie Sanders, the only socialist ever elected to the United States Senate, right? Comes from Vermont. Upton Sinclair, you know, when he wrote It Can't Happen Here, takes place in Vermont. And if you read through it, you get a feeling for just how odd politics in Vermont can be. Well, politics in Maine are equally fucking weird. So if anyone wonders how a place where most people would mistakenly imagine it's like this bastion of progressive politics could elect a troglodyte like Paul LePage, it's because Maine is a really fucking weird place. Keep in mind, Maine also produced Stephen King. So,
and I think that they got smart enough and they have ousted him.
Well, he was term limited out.
Yeah. Yay, term limits.
Dude, term limits are a fucking beautiful thing. As long as they are arranged properly so that you don't kill institutional memory, which is actually a very important attribute, not just for government, but for big institutions in the private sector as well. Term limits are amazing.
Stay tuned for the next episode of Plastic Cup Politics. We will talk about term limits because I think that is important. So we will discuss that on next episode.
Cliffhanger. All right. So this new system, basically what this new system said was we want you to provide us with a rank ordered vote. Right. So what you're going to do is you're going to vote for your first choice. This is the person who ideally I want to have the job. And then you're going to vote for the person who, if they don't get the job, you would rather have it after them. And I think in Maine, they even provided a third option, which I don't see why there would be a point in doing that, but they did. So what happened was, and this law only gets, this mechanism is only engaged if no candidate wins 50% plus one.
I guess we should touch real quick on first past the post again, because isn't that 50, same thing, 50 plus one?
Yeah. The candidate who is first past the post is the candidate who gets 50% of the vote plus one vote. And that person in most American jurisdictions gets all the power. They win everything, right?
Yes.
Maine decided to do things a little differently. Let's just simplify it a little bit. They didn't use this language, but just so everyone understands. Basically, the law was like, hey, look, if you're a Republican, we want you to vote for the Republican candidate, right? If that's what you intended to do. But then we want you to tell us who you think should have the job if your candidate doesn't get a high enough percentage of the votes. And so I think they did a rank ordered preference of three candidates. Then when election day came, none of the candidates on the ballot, because there were two, there was a Republican, a Democrat, and then two independents, one conservative and one liberal, all running in the general election, and no one got 50% of the vote plus one vote. Right. So no one got a majority. The Republican candidate did have a slim plurality on election day, which in most jurisdictions in the United States, that's what first past the post has been interpreted to mean. Right? Even though you're not actually getting 50% plus one vote, you are getting the highest percentage of votes plus one.
Yes. Like Bill Clinton.
Yes.
In his first go around.
Well, and pretty much every presidential candidate for like the last 50 years. It's actually the number of presidential, the number of presidents who have gotten an actual majority of voters on election day is vanishingly small. Now, the number of presidents who have gotten a majority of the people who have shown up on election day is a little higher. That's fairly significant.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, but it gets into our conversation like later down the road. If we want to talk about things like in the news, you'll hear both the news media and politicians talk about something called a mandate, right?
Yes.
We have a mandate. But do they really, either side, Democrats or Republicans, do they really have what any of us would think of as a mandate? When they say they have a mandate, what do you think of?
Well, that would mean that the majority of the American public is on their side.
Exactly. And that is not what actually happens at all.
Ever.
Ever.
Well, because we have such low voter turnout.
See, that's the thing. Relative to other democracies, actually, our voter turnout isn't terrible. It's not great. You wish it would be higher, but you can understand why it's not, especially in the United States, where we don't make voting very easy for working people.
And trying to make it hard.
And please don't delude yourselves, any of our listeners, into thinking that that's unintentional. That is very much by fucking design.
When you look at what was going on in Wisconsin, what are the things they're trying to do? They're trying to shorten early voter. But yep. We can get past that and get back to, you have more than one candidate, and it kind of seems like they just kind of boot out whoever didn't get there, so it knocks it down to two candidates.
Well, but yeah. So what they
don't
do
vote
is
vote again.
They take the, yeah, no one had to go back and vote again. What they did was they took the top two vote getters, so the top two candidates who had gotten the most votes in the first go around, and then they reallocated all of the remaining votes of everyone who wasn't the top two based on the rank preference that those voters had indicated. After that, the top vote getter was the winner,
who happened to be the Democrat. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say that people knew about this, that this was a voting system they put into place, and people voted for this. So it's not like they just sprung this out on them.
They voted for it by ballot initiative twice. They voted for it once by ballot initiative. Overwhelmingly, more than 60% of voters who turned out for that election voted in favor of it. The GOP in Maine scuttled it. And so the voters put it back on the ballot and voted for it again, overwhelmingly. So yes, Mainers were very aware that this was going to be the system for this election. They had voted for it explicitly twice.
In general, how do you feel about this system?
I think it's fucking fantastic. I think it's a great idea, man. Like, look, it is the best compromise position between proportional voting, like they do in most parliamentary systems, and our first-past-the-post system. The reason it's a compromise between the two, we have a lot of people out there who are dissatisfied with the selection being offered by the GOP and the DNC. And they very much want there to be a viable third party, or maybe even a fourth party or a fifth party. But as I've explained a few different times on this show, that's not possible under the current law. We have a first past the post system in almost all of the 50 states. As a result, it's structurally impossible for there to be a viable third party in the United States. What Maine's system does is it says, okay, we accept that there's still going to be two-party dominance, but we want people who have other preferences to be able to express those at the ballot, but still have their vote count for something on election day. So let's say I'm a Green Party, and we've talked about the Green Party here on the podcast before. There are plenty of Green Party voters out there who don't like me at this point, because I've talked some mad shit about their influence on the Arizona election. So let's say I'm a Green Party voter in Maine. I want to vote for Jill Stein, or not Jill Stein for president, because the Maine's law doesn't apply to the presidential election. I want to vote for a Green Party candidate for the House of Representatives, but I want to make sure that, because I know my candidate's not going to win, when they lose, I want to make sure that my vote doesn't automatically get allocated to the GOP, which is the antithesis of my values as a Green Party voter, right? So now I can say, okay, fine. If the Green Party candidate doesn't win, I want my vote to go to the Democrat. Or I can get even more nuanced than that. If the Green Party candidate doesn't win, I want my vote to go to the Libertarian. If the Libertarian doesn't win, then I want it to go to the Democrat.
Basically, it would be like me going, yeah, I would really love for Dennis Kucinich to win, but John Kerry's fine.
Yeah, and it leaves open the possibility that, hey, look, if there's a really fucking weird election year and Dennis Kucinich actually wins, your fucking vote meant something.
Yeah.
But even if your vote really meant something, right? Because you voted for Kucinich first. But if the election proceeds as we all know it will, and that adorable little elf, Dennis Kucinich, doesn't win, that adorable little elf who's married to a 6-foot-tall supermodel somehow doesn't win, your vote still meant something. It didn't get allocated to someone you hate.
Wow, I just had a thought. I wonder if the difference between Dennis Kucinich and Jeff Sessions is just that Dennis Kucinich was vegan.
Oh, I think it's because Dennis Kucinich got laid.
And is not a terrible person.
That counts for a lot.
So I was just really excited to see that, because we had discussed different voting apparati in the past. So I was just really excited, even though that scumbag wanted to make sure that he wrote that it was a stolen election because he's a piece of shit on there. But I just want to make sure that we got to actually talk about something that we had discussed in action.
Yep.
Even if the Republicans didn't enjoy it in Maine.
And it fucking worked. It worked in a state that is notorious for having a certain portion of its population be dissatisfied with their electoral outcomes because essentially their protest votes ended up going to a candidate they despise. They now have a system that can elect representatives to Congress who more or less approximate their voters' actual views.
Yeah, that is actually pretty rad. You know what? I think that might be our positive note to end this damn podcast on.
I agree wholeheartedly.
You will probably get this in the new year because, but you never know. This one might be short. I might actually fire this out. You might actually have some New Year's listening. No guarantees though. If I don't get it out, you can feel free to yell at us at Plastic Cup Pod on your favorite social media sites. You can write us a nice little rate and review on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe on the aforementioned Apple Podcast and Spotify and Stitcher. The reviews help. What I say is tell a friend. You know,
yeah.
Everybody has somebody at work that you guys roll eyes together when Larry in accounting says something asinine. Just let them know about Plastic Cup Politics Podcast.
Mark and I do this because we enjoy talking to each other about politics and media and fun stuff. We're not making a living off of it or anything, but still, it's nice to have, like, your efforts validated by having more people listen. So please, if you like what we're offering you here, talk to your friends, tell them to join in and leave some comments for us and some questions. We definitely want to have a conversation with our listeners. So please reach out.
We are not in the prediction business, so we won't tell you what 2019 has in store for us, but you can listen here and we'll tell you what did happen.
Actually, I can make two predictions.
Oh, we are getting into 2019 predictions.
Yeah, 2019 predictions, because this is going to come out after the new year. One, we will enter a recession in 2019. Two, the housing bubble, at least in Arizona and probably nationwide, will burst in 2019. And three, the House will vote to pass articles of impeachment in 2019.
You heard it here first, folks. Stay tuned to Plastic Cup Politics Podcast for all these things. That's it.
Later, everyone. All Happy right. New Year. Whoa!